From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. We're still here. We are still here.
We're still here. We're still on iTunes.
We're still there. Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
All right. Yes. And
I'm shocked. This is what happens when I'm not here.
Yes, that's right. As Garrow said, now you know never to miss another episode.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And anyway. Want to give a big shout out and a big thanks to Garrow for the last two episodes. They've been very enjoyable.
Yeah, and thank you, Garrow, for ruining my future career options.
That's all right. And also a big thank you to Miss Leslie for being on last week.
Yes,
much appreciated.
Yes, it was very funny. I enjoyed it
very much. So, all right.
I was horrified, but I enjoyed it.
As you should be. Anyway, this week back into the topics, which we haven't done for a while, and this one.
Yeah, we're going to do a serious show, you guys.
I know, right?
We're not just going to be dicks and get drunk and make racial slurs.
Yes.
While John suggests that we edit things, you know.
Yeah.
While I quietly nod while I listen.
Yeah. And what we're going to talk about is a topic that John started at the start of the year. This was actually meant to be done the first episode of 2014, but just got put on the back burner and never eventuated until today. And John put up on Twitter about how much he liked the actor we're talking about today, and I said, oh, well, that would make a good show. And I talked about it and with John, and we were all up for it, and with Hunter as well, and we're going to name this one They Killed Superman. And by that we mean we're not going to be talking about the 1992 comic where they killed Superman.
What?
No.
I was reading the comic. I read the comic. I'm so up on the death of Superman.
Yeah.
I know everything about Doomsday. I read the comics back to front, the news stories, everything. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, then
I think
I think I'd be, you better just leave the show then now for this week and come back next week if you... See you, mate.
Once I leave, though, it's just going to be all N-bombs and... What?
Yeah, like you're the voice of decorum on this show, right? Don't give me that garbage. So, anyway, yeah, we're not going to be talking about the 1992 comic where they killed Superman. We're not going to be talking about... Christopher Reeve and his untimely death.
What?
No, none of that.
I was watching the last episodes of Smallville he was in.
Everybody thought we were going to talk about Christopher Reeve.
They did. They really thought. Yeah.
Everybody thought that.
But what we are going to talk about is his namesake, George Reeves, and how Hollywood get him killed. I don't believe he killed himself. We'll get into that later, though. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Superman and the Mole Men from 1951. And we're also going to talk about the 2006 feature Hollywoodland, based on the life and death of George Reeves and his struggle with being Superman. And anyway, got John here, as you heard.
Yeah.
Quiet as a mouse. And Hunter's back. How you going, Hunter?
Yeah!
Yeah.
I'm here.
Hunter's here for the bros. He's for the bro talk.
Yeah, beer.
And the Rob Zombie impersonations as well.
He's getting a tattoo on his arm later this month.
Yeah.
And I must.
Devil, pussy woman.
That's good. And I was just going to say, actually, had you not heard the latest episode we did by now, which you just have the other day. I was going to suggest to John that I think the best way we can get Hunter to listen to the older episodes that he's not on is just stick them on vinyl. What do you reckon, John?
Yeah, exactly. Limited edition, cherry red, also a green pressing.
And just stick Pink Floyd on the cover, and it's guaranteed to get Hunter to listen to it.
I did listen to the new Pink Floyd on vinyl multiple times.
My next question to you is why? Not just why would you listen to on vinyl, why would you listen to Pink Floyd in general?
Because I like Pink Floyd, and I'm a big fan of the Division Bell, and the new one is sort of made up of material left over from the Division Bell, and I listened to it, and I enjoyed it.
So is Roger Waters on the latest Pink Floyd?
Oh, fuck no.
Well, I ain't Pink Floyd then.
He's too busy hating Jews somewhere.
I don't listen to anything past Piper at the Gates of Dawn. I just don't.
Oh, of course you don't.
John only listens to Sid Barrett, Pink Floyd.
Right, I only like that.
What about Source of All Secrets? Is that on your Pink Floyd playlist, or is that too late in the game for you?
It's okay. I like some of the later stuff, but about up to the early 70s when you got all the classic rock staples, I just think they're just dull.
What about Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii? Do you enjoy that one? I think that's quite good, actually.
Never listened to it.
It's actually a movie, mate. It's not an album.
No, I know, but there was a soundtrack. But,
oh, was there? Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Never seen
I kind of like when there was a flood of their stuff on home video, when you got to see more stuff. I kind of lost interest in anything Pink Floyd because I had to hear Dark Side of the Moon on classic rock radio just constantly, and it drove me crazy.
And The Wall as well.
Yeah, and The Wall. I mean, it's just overplayed, and I just never cared for that stuff.
Of course.
Well, I think The Wall is overplayed. It's just another brick in the wall. Part 3 or whatever it is overplayed, or part 2 whatever it is, just overly played.
The Wall is like, it's like arty disco. I just don't care for it.
Oh, the film is intolerable to watch. I can't stand it.
I hate the movie.
It's crap. Yeah. I mean, I admire the artistic imagery in it, but it's just god-awful mess. It really is. But anyway, we're not talking about Pink Floyd. We're talking about George Reeves. And John, I want to ask you first, how far back in your memory stretch when you first saw The Adventures of Superman?
It's the first time I saw Superman, because in the mid-70s, a lot of local, American channels, on the UHF dial, would air, the Adam West Batman show and then Superman back-to-back with George Reeves. Because they still didn't have a problem with showing black and white TV shows on local television back then. And a lot of kids would watch it. And so that was just kind of an accepted staple on television. So I remember as far back as probably 75, that was my first idea of Superman. I don't think I watched Super Friends until maybe a couple of years later when it was my Saturday morning regular thing.
Okay. And myself, I would stretch back, I think, to about 80, 81 was the first time I saw it. And it used to air. I remember my dad used to get up very early for work, about 5:30, and for some reason I'd wake up and I'd go out there with my dad, and he'd be getting, ironing his shirt for work, and I'd be watching The Adventures of Superman on TV. At 6 a.m. it was aired, and it ran till 6:25, I believe, or 6:30 or something like that. And after that, they would play a Marvel, those 5 or 6 minute Marvel shorts they play, like Iron Man and those ones they had from 66? Yeah.
I didn't see those until, 1999, maybe. When
really?
Yeah.
No, I
didn't know about
kid.
Those for the longest time.
Yeah, they'd run one of those, and usually it would be Thor, Hulk, or Iron Man. Sometimes Captain America, very rarely any Submariner, but yeah, they would run them straight after the Adventures of Superman. And yeah, I remember seeing the Adventures of Superman, and predominantly the color episodes, but some black and whites as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I always thought George Reeves has always been my favorite Clark Kent / Superman as well, and I'll get into that later on. Hannah, what about yourself?
I saw Adventures of Superman on Nick at Night, I think, when I was a kid, and I watched it pretty regularly. And that was pretty much my introduction to Superman. I didn't see Superman the movie till years later.
Has anybody here, we all watched Man the Mole Man, and I myself watched a few extra things, just not for the purpose of the show, but just because I wanted to. There was Superman, Stamp Day for Superman. I watched that little short, by War Bonds thing that they had, or Stamp Day for Superman, yeah. And I watched a few episodes as well. And now, we all will agree that the flying technique in this show is not great, right?
Yeah, it's not.
Right. Do you feel that Warner Brothers were sort of slapping George Reeves and the previous crew in the face when they said the tagline for their 78 film, "You Will Believe a Man Can Fly"?
Yes.
Totally.
I think so.
They pulled the Reeves show off. The old show was pulled off the air for a while the Superman movie was in the theaters. Like, it seems like it was
like a disassociation with it, right?
Then it came back in 79, but the local stations would only run it on the weekends and would only run the color episodes.
Yeah, they wouldn't run the black
and white. That was the syndication package. You only ran the color episodes and you ran it on the weekends. You didn't run it every day. Because, like, when I was a kid, watching it first time around in 75, 76, I mainly just saw black and white episodes. I didn't know there were color episodes until 79 or 80.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because that's what struck me. I mean, I didn't know that for years, but I mean, it just struck me not long ago when we were talking about doing this George Reeves, and I looked at that and it said, you will believe, and I think it had the word believe, you know, like in bold letters with an underline, and it's like, okay, you're saying then that no one believed that Superman could fly back in 51 or 53 when the series first aired.
Only right. Dumb kids and shut-ins.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, those dumb kids made the ratings an absolute belter of a show when it came out.
I'm quoting Hollywoodland, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I personally, I think George Reeves is the best Clark Kent, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at the others afterwards, Dean Cain in Lois and Clark, I didn't buy for a second. Sorry.
Never saw it.
I watched a couple.
I never saw it either.
It seemed like when I remember seeing the ads for Lois and Clark on TV and just thinking it looked like Friends with Superman. I don't know.
Yeah pretty much. Who else did we get? We got Brandon Routh in Superman Returns, which
horrible.
Yeah. I mean, I was always okay with it, but now when I look back, it's like, oh, God, it is not good whatsoever.
No, he's just doing a Reeves impression.
Exactly, yeah. And also, getting back to Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve.
While he was okay, he's Clark Kent. He was okay as Superman. His Clark Kent seemed way too dumb. For a guy who's working at a newspaper, he seemed just too clunky.
He overdid the whole wimp thing, which is how it was written.
He seemed more like a photocopy boy than a reporter, you know? It's just... he's hard to buy. You know what he was actually doing? It was actually Clark Kent playing Jimmy Olsen. That's what it was. And it was just...
Totally.
You know, he was basically playing the Jimmy Olsen, you know, Jack Larson character off The Adventures of Superman. And it's just, that's not Clark Kent. You know, Clark Kent should be, you know, upright and you know, and stoic and, you know, he should look like a reporter, something that you would actually take seriously.
He's nondescript, too. Like, he's just not a particularly memorable guy.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. What were you saying, John?
Yeah, I was just going to say, has anybody seen the Kirk Allen serial that predates the Reeves?
Only a couple of chapters.
Right, I was wondering what his... I haven't seen it, so I was wondering what his Clark Kent was like, if he played him kind of weird or awkward or timid.
Yeah, I doubt it.
He said that Reeves basically insisted that he play Clark as a tough-nosed reporter. So I don't know if early scripts had, like, written him as a moron or whatever, but...
Yeah.
You know, supposedly they said it was Reeves' insistence that Clark be portrayed as very straight-laced and brave and not, like, a coward. And I don't know what he was like in the comic books in the 50s or 40s. I've only read, like, the early Siegel and Shuster ones where he's kind of nondescript, you know, because they'll be in the panel like, okay, Lois, I'll see you there. And then he's Superman jumping over to the scene, you know.
Now, they always seem to have write Superman and play Superman, save for George Reeves, as like a man-child with ADD or some shit, or like a hyper, what do they call it, HDAD?
ADHD.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. It's just like someone who's always, you know, always frantic. It's like, no, George Reeves as Clark Kent was, it's like, yeah, he was always winking at the camera. Always. Yeah, right. Literally as well. But you totally bought him as a Clark Kent. And, you know, I liked him as Superman as well, save for the padding underneath the suit, which is...
Yeah, it's so funny. I love that in Hollywood Land when we see him wearing the padding and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But anyway, let's shift straight into Superman and the Mole Men, the 58-minute feature from 1951. Had you guys ever seen this before?
No, I've had it on a as a special feature on my Superman the Movie DVD for a long time.
Yeah.
But I never watched it, and I settled down to watch it last night, and I was talking to John on Facebook, and I said, I'm watching Superman and the Mole Men, and he goes, oh, it's an hour long. It'll seem like three.
Jeez, that's and rough.
I was like, and I said, yeah, it's kind of seeming that way.
Man. Anyway.
I saw it originally as like two episodes of of the TV show.
Oh, the unknown people. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. I saw it for that.
Okay. Yeah.
They all look like Mr. Pidlix or whatever the fuck.
And I hadn't seen it in probably 35 years, so it was kind of strange how I remembered scenes as they occurred. I was like, oh, I remember watching this as a kid, kind of flashing back to that house in Metairie. You know, I was like, ah.
That's not remembering, John. That's predictability. That's what that is.
Okay.
Yeah. God, I watch this every couple of years easily. Very easily.
It's a standard in your household?
Well, with me anyway, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an hour long. It's... just getting off the track for a sec, did you guys ever watch the Unknown People Part 1 and 2 as well, which this was cut into later?
Yeah, no. That's what I saw.
Okay, that's what you saw, yeah.
I don't remember it.
Okay, yeah, it's this movie trimmed down, and all the references to the term Mole Men is removed as well in that episode. Mm-hmm. But not in Superman and the Mole Men. But I find Superman and the Mole Men more... while being longer and seeming like 3 hours long, as you two say, I find the run it flow a lot more easier than the Unknown People Part 1 and 2. Probably because I'm used to Superman and the Mole Men quite a bit, because I rented the VHS of it when it was out back in like 95 or something from this huge video store. The British import VHS tape here. I'm like, Superman and the Mole Men, shit! And I copied that and kept that one and just watched every so often, but certainly watched a lot more once it hit DVD here on the good one, Warner Brothers Australia, by the way. Now it's on the season 1 of The Adventures of Superman in the US. Yeah, being dropped here from that version on the Australian DVD. Well done, idiots. I've actually got mine on the big Superman 10-13 disc box set, whatever it is. Luckily got in there, yeah. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually. It's dumb. There's not a great deal of Superman. A public service announcement, sure, for tolerance.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when I was watching it, I was like, this feels like a monster movie, but the monsters have Superman to defend them.
Yeah.
You know, where you have the angry villagers who hate the little, like, midgets with giant foreheads running around that... And I guess they in real life they would be the Australian populace trying to set them on fire, but
yeah,
but
it's kind of a Day the Earth Stood Still edited down to like 53
exactly. So, I mean it takes
like,
a lot of
and like a fraction of the budget, a decimal point.
Yeah, it takes a lot of the tropes of those modern sci-fi monster movies of the era. And insert Superman into the proceedings.
Yeah, it's true. But okay, Hunter, I want to hear from you. Seeing it for a first time, what did you what was your initial reaction after it had finished?
Yeah, my initial reaction was it feels like a 50s-ish sci-fi monster movie, but with Superman. You know. I wasn't particularly moved by it either one way or the other. I just kind of thought, it's that's what it is. It's a short Supes feature.
So I wouldn't get a replay with you again, pretty much.
Probably not. I mean, you know, if I had kids, I'd probably show it to them.
Yeah, but it's so far removed from shows and movies these days that they'd get bored as well. I mean, I'm
true.
Sure my kids would.
My kid was bored senselessly by it, but
oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Well, because when I was a kid, I enjoyed the Superman TV show, so I just assumed maybe a kid would get a kick out of it.
The TV show is edited a lot quicker, and the storytelling is a lot faster than what you see in Superman and the Mole Men. It's like it feels like a pilot or test run for the show, which I guess it was.
Yeah.
But the actual TV show is way more fun than that movie.
Yeah, because I remember liking the TV show quite a bit, and I didn't like Stu. Unlike Stu, I didn't go back and watch any of the TV show, even though I should have. But I just watched it, and when I was watching it, I was talking to John on my phone, you know. it didn't captivate me, you know. Mm-hmm. And when stuff was happening, it just kind of was kind of there's little people with big foreheads, and Superman occasionally jumps in front of them.
My thought was you would only watch this out of nostalgia if you saw it in the 70s or 80s. Like Stu or I did, you would really only watch it for nostalgic reasons, but watching it decades later, having not seen it in years, it was just like, ooh, boy.
I did see what Stu's saying about George Reeves as Clark Kent.
Yeah.
I did find his demeanor refreshing. He's so nondescript and just sort of plain-spoken. Yeah. You know, like, and in Man of Steel, we didn't really get to see him as Clark Kent, quote-unquote, except until the very end, but...
Right. It was really, you got to see Smallville Clark turning into...
Yeah, you got to see... exactly. We got to see that, but the moment we did see Clark, he was kind of a little more... sort of nondescript, but
I have a feeling in the next movie Clark will be like doing kettlebells and extreme sports.
I think MMA Clark Kent,
bungee jumping. He'll be drinking Monster energy drinks, you know.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Man of Steel, rubbish. That was a horrible,
I don't think Russell Crowe will be in the next one.
I think Man of Steel is amazing. But,
of course you do. You're part of the ADHD crowd, aren't you? Of this,
I enjoyed it because it's not a Marvel movie that got overrated and jacked off to for years.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I love Man of Steel, and it moves me, actually.
See, the difference I found with the Clark Kent between George Reeves and everybody else was that with his Clark Kent, I could sit and watch him and not want Superman to come on and not say, hurry up, Superman, I want to see Superman. With the others, I'm like, oh, this is boring. This Clark Kent's rubbish. Just get Superman on the screen. That's the big difference.
But it's also like, because Superman isn't really that impressive in the old show.
Well, yeah, it's not because the
foam suit is more obvious with the digital transfer.
it really is. Like, when I was watching it on DVD, I was like, it's so obvious he's wearing this, like, muscle suit underneath.
And it's kind of like the props are bounced off of him, and it's kind of, because it's very, it was extremely low-budget show for its intended goal, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was, it was funded by a cereal, wasn't it? Kellogg's funded that show, yeah. But if you think those effects look rubbish on a normal size TV, imagine how they looked on an 11-foot screen that I was watching it on. Yeah, that foam rubber suit really stuck out. Briefly before I cut you off, John, there was you could see a bit of the foam rubber actually sticking out from the top of Superman's neckline.
Well, and see, you didn't notice that stuff in the 70s with our old tube TVs because it wasn't that clear. But I was thinking, if you look at Adventures of Captain Marvel, which was a serial from the 40s that Republic did and had effects by the Lydeckers, and it was based on a competing comic book property, it's like that. The special effects in that are great. Like, they did a dummy effect for the flying, and it was way more effective than anything until, like, Christopher Reeve did the role.
Yeah. Do you find Christopher Reeves too overly praised?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people have affection for him because of what happened to him.
Exactly.
That was the first Superman many of them saw in the theater because of that late 70s post-Star Wars generation seeing it. And, you know, like a lot of people tell you their favorite comic book movie is Superman 2 or Superman the movie. And I liked them when I was a kid, but I never loved them the way these people did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just, I mean, I enjoyed them as well, like John was saying, but...
I like them too, but I don't love them, like...
I mean, like I said...
I like Man of Steel the most, personally.
Jesus.
I just say that to make Stu groan.
What's wrong with you?
Even though it's, I love it. I love Man of Steel.
Jesus. Yeah, you got Fisherman Kent.
Yeah.
Let's go catch some rainbow trout with Clark Kent. Like
awesome.
The fishing adventures of Superman.
All it needed was him flashing back to like Master Poe telling him to walk on the rice paper. He's like wandering.
And then,
and
before that, we had Russell Crowe in a form-fitting suit, which I know was Stu's favorite part.
Yeah, it's like Carlisle, I'm going to send you to Earth. Oh, South Swan, that's good to know. Yes, where was my line again there?
Yeah, he had a Sydney Rabideau's beanie on the whole time.
Yeah, well, they won the grand final this year as well. Oh. No, I will say it. I watched the game, and they thoroughly deserved the win.
Wow!
Only because the other team I absolutely hate with a vengeance. Because they knocked Storm out of the finals, so it doesn't matter. I was going for Souths, but that's the last time you'll ever hear me say that again, ever.
Everybody take note. This is a big moment.
It's an audio grab there for you. That's it's one for the vault. But yeah, getting back to like we're not putting a boot into Christopher Reeve or anything like that. He was good, but I found he was too overly praised because they tended pretty much in 78. Just dump entirely on the Adventures of Superman, like you were saying, John, like they pretty much treat it like it never existed.
Yeah,
when it was first released, I'm saying in 78. Yeah,
or they were kind of like, forget it.
Yeah,
like, forget about it. This is the real Superman, or this is the real deal. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and I find the Reeve movies to overdo the camp, and they're just like. Boy, the third and fourth one were just wretched.
They're unwatchable. I mean,
yeah,
you're right about them overdoing the camp, because when I watch Superman the movie, I think it's great up until Christopher Reeve starts doing his Clark shtick, because I love the stuff, like the stuff on Krypton is sort of mysterious and strange. Then you have the stuff in Smallville, which has this really powerful
Norman Rockwell.
Yeah, it has this Americana feel, but it also has like emotion behind it. And then it sort of becomes like kind of goofy after that. Like you have Clark going, "Oh, gee, Lois."
I'm the complete opposite. I skip the Smallville and Krypton, go straight to Metropolis.
Oh, really? I love, because that's my favorite part of the movie. Every time I watch it, I'm like, "This is great." And then I get to Metropolis and I go, And then you have Lex Luthor, like, "Oh, Ned Beatty, gee, Mr. Luthor," you know?
Yeah. They look like they're out of a Carol Burnett show sketch.
Yeah.
When I was a kid watching it, I did not understand why Lex Luthor was wearing a toupee, who is Otis, you know? I didn't understand any of that. And his plot made no sense to me as, like, a six-year-old. What's that?
Burt Reynolds understood.
Of course.
I was waiting for that.
but I remember just the plot just made no sense every time I watched it as a kid. The whole thing of sinking California and the nuclear weapons. All that shit is boring when you're dealing with a timer and nuclear codes and all that nonsense. It's always boring on screen. We know they're not going to blow up California. Why bother? It's just, like, ridiculous. The ticking bomb thing never works for me. And it was
And what ruined it, too, was the time travel thing. I'm going to spin it.
What a cheat. Well, why do anything?
Why doesn't Superman just do that for everything? I mean,
do it for Krypton. Do it, bring your family back and everything. If you got that, you're that damn powerful. You know? Jeez. Yeah. But another thing is, it's like, as a kid, picking up the Superman comics, it would be like he'd fight a giant robot, or Vandal Savage would bring a Tyrannosaurus Rex into the city or something. And what's he doing in the movie? He's just like, pushing the bridge up, and there's no real confrontational action. He's stopping a missile. Ooh.
Macho Man?
He's not doing anything, you know?
Did you say Macho Man?
No, Vandal Savage. He's some villain who was
Macho Man Savage. What the hell's he doing?
No, this is an actual comic book villain. It was in the first action comic I ever bought, so I was like, well, why aren't they using this villain in the movies? You know, why is it always Luthor?
Yeah, all right.
And these characters, they invent, like, Zod. I don't think Zod was ever in the comics.
No, I think it was invented entirely for the Superman film.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, good character, though.
I know he was in the comics, but I don't know if he was in the comics before the movie.
He wasn't. There was a similar character. It was like a Krypton outlaw, but he wasn't called Zod, but he was another escapee from the Phantom Zone.
Zod! Sorry.
Yeah. That was a Mario Puzo creation from his original script, apparently.
It was actually leftovers from The Godfather.
But yeah, it's like I want like action and crazy stuff. I don't want like, no, I'm catching a missile and ooh, the damn, like, I hate disaster films are boring to me because it just, I just don't care. So it's like, ooh, the weather, oh my god.
You know? So you're not a fan of Irwin Allen then, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't like those movies. Everybody else loves those and I think they're lame and boring, but I don't know, people really do. I know people who love them. Watch Towering Inferno.
I remember seeing Earthquake as a kid and thinking it was the dumbest shit I'd ever seen.
I was just dull.
How could you not like The Swarm? The Swarm's fantastic.
NBC used to air that like every month.
It's like,
oh, dude,
like,
Michael Caine, Catherine Ross.
I was going through the inventory at the record store I worked at.
Yeah.
And there was a copy of The Swarm on DVD, and it was like, it was going for decent money on Amazon for a clapper case.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's still in print or what. But.
Oh, that's been out since the late 90s. I dare say it wouldn't be more.
Well, but I scanned it, and it was going for, like, you know, they were selling it in the store for, like, $6.99, and it was going for, like, $20 on Amazon.
It's because they're out of print on Warner Brothers. They're technically archive releases now, so you can't, like, just order them retail anyway.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, it was like, okay, that gets pulled for Amazon, for the Amazon store. You know, it was, right. So I just remember seeing Irwin Allen's The Swarm, and, you know.
It sucks.
I bet. I mean,
we'll get hate mail, you know, for me slamming Irwin Allen's stuff. I think those disaster movies are terrible. And I like his TV shows. I like Lost in Space and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. But.
Yeah. Well, as you see here now, I'm just looking at The Swarm on Amazon for an acceptable used copy of it on DVD. It's starting at $24.95, and it goes up from there.
There you go. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, have fun sitting through that dross.
Yeah, I know. No, you'd be shocked as to the shit I would look up on Amazon on DVD that goes for decent money. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, like the old Anchor Bay Quatermass in the Pit DVD with the crappy sound, like, was going for like $70 on Amazon.
Oh, I think that was one, actually.
Are you kidding me?
I got probably $6 for mine trading it in.
I bought the whole Hammer Horror box set for $44 on Blu-ray, which features 13 movies with all the Quatermass movies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're not available in the U.S. yet. Well, we don't have a lot of the remasters.
God.
So the prices for the old shitty DVDs are crazy.
And these are the freaking Blu-rays. Oh, there's like, I think there four Quatermass movies.
I believe so. You get the new transfer.
The only Quatermass movie that you can get for a decent price in the U.S. is Halloween 3.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, he's here all week, folks. Anyway, getting back to Superman the Mole Man, John, what was your take on it? I'm going to guess you said you were quite bored by it.
Yeah, it didn't hold up much for me. I'd rather watch the regular episodes of the TV show when they were having a lot more fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Because as we find out in Hollywood, he was trying to play it completely serious, and they did treat it as a joke as well. They were all saying, and I remember seeing an interview with Jack Larson last night, where he said he didn't want to do the Jimmy Olsen bit. His agent said, no one is going to see it. Just take the money and run, which is the same thing that George Reeves was told as well. No one's going to see it, just take the money and run, and boy, were they wrong.
That's always the case.
Yeah. Didn't know that Jack Larson was an openly gay man either. No idea.
Yeah, I wasn't aware until I read the Hollywood Kryptonite book, and I was like, whoa.
That's a good thing I'm going to bring up is later on, the books that I was checking up on, there seems to be about four or five on the death of George Reeves.
I think there are by now. There were. I just found this at a library sale. I didn't know how many. I think this is the first, and there's been more since.
There's one called Hollywood Superman that I wanted to get. These are all on Kindle for like $3. I'm going to just bite the bullet and just download them on my Kindle. And there was another one, I'll check up later. I'll give you guys titles later on. But there's quite a few. There's at least four or five. And I think with the film Hollywoodland, that they took the three most plausible, popular possibilities of how Reeves was killed. But we'll get into that later when we talk Hollywoodland.
Yeah.
Yeah. For myself, Superman the Mole Man, yeah, like I said, I projected it upstairs on the screen. I had a lot of fun with it. I don't think that's going to make a difference, an overall difference, but as I said, I would have seen this more than you guys, because I watch it every couple of years easily, and I really enjoy it. You know, it runs quick for me. It sure as hell doesn't run 3 hours. It feels like it's about 45 minutes. Is the acting great in it? It's not bad. Are the Mole Men realistic? No. They're just a bunch of midgets with bald caps on. That's all it is. And really bad looking bald caps.
And people trying to set them on fire.
Yes, that joke's going to last for a while, it looks like.
With Australian accents.
Yes, exactly. But there was a guy called Harry Thomas who did the makeup on the Mole Men in this. Do you know where he was? Who he'd be linked to a couple of years later?
No.
Ed Wood for the Plan 9 movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
For Plan 9 and Bride of the Monster, he ended up working on that. But I've got the Ed Wood book, and he was talking about how he worked on Superman the Mole Man. I'm like, huh. So he did when I looked at the credits last night. Well, I looked at the, because there are no credits on Superman the Mole Man, but I'm talking about the actual IMDb credits I'm talking about. Yeah, so yeah, he ended up working with Ed Wood.
It did kind of feel Ed Woodish to me.
It did a bit, you're right there, you know.
And I'm not saying that to be a dick. Like, it did feel
Ed
Woodish to me.
Yeah, no, it's not a, you know, a backhanded comment. It really did seem like an Ed Wood film, and that's not a bad thing either, compared to some of the other junk out there these days. But yeah, like Superman the Mole Man, it's not a great deal tour. They go out to, was it Silsby?
Yeah, world's deepest oil well or something.
World's deepest oil well, which is
25 minute ride from Metropolis? I forget what they said. They feel like that was a big deal.
Yeah,
and they
right,
were
yeah.
like, we came all the way from Metropolis for this well.
Yeah. And they've drilled into the earth 32,000 something feet, which is 6 miles apparently, or just about nearly 6 miles. And they've dug through to an empty area. There's nothing there. The drill's just stopped and everything, all the tools are broken. And they've dug through to the Mole Men, the inhabitants of the center of the earth, they're pretty much saying. And they come up and they seem like a threat, and they make an old man die and drop his oranges just by looking at him through the window. They're playing with a child, and the mother screams, and they seem very, very scared of these midgets with bald caps on. Like, you look at them now, you think these are just midgets out in a Halloween prank or something like that. But
yeah.
Apparently they seemed very, very scary back in 1951. So anyway, the whole thing turns into like a PSA for acceptance of these people, and you know, as Hunter was saying, Superman's on their side, and you got the obligatory rednecks who want to shoot them, and yeah, you got the old sheriff there who
we gotta kill them fags. I mean midgets. I mean mole people.
That's right. And yeah, anyway, at the end, Superman, it seemed like there'd be an invasion of Mole Men, but there's really only four in the end. So it hardly, caused some mass hysteria. But, so the Mole Men come up to the surface, a couple more creep out, one of them gets shot. Then they're carrying this contraption.
Oh, and by the way, he gets shot from a great distance with a shotgun.
Yeah.
It always happens.
You know, like, boom, and it's a shotgun, and he's like, oh, I've been shot.
And the main protagonist, the guy who's the gung-ho one who wants to kill all the mole people, ends up getting phased by this phaser that they're carrying, which I found out was actually the inside of a Hoover vacuum. So it tells you how low on budget this film was. And he ends up getting saved by Superman, blah, blah, blah. Superman tells them all people...
It's more than you deserve.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks for saving me, Superman. It's more than you deserve.
Now I've seen the error of my ways. Time to lay down those arms. And Superman says, you know, go in peace or something like that, and that's it. The film finishes. It's not a great deal to it. It runs under an hour.
And then the mole people destroy the oil well or something.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that's about it. And like I said, not a great deal to it. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It kind of makes me want to go and watch it again tonight, but I got work tonight, so that won't be happening.
You're a strange sort.
You could watch it at work.
Hey, John, I like Pacific Rim, so, you know, pretty much...
Watch, watch it on your phone. You can watch that in Pacific Rim on your phone.
Yeah, of course. It. Yeah, nothing like straining my eyesight even more, right?
Worthy of being on a phone.
That's all I have etched on John's gravestone. The end of Pacific Rim was worthy of watching on a phone.
I used to piss people off when they would say, man, you're going to be able to watch a movie on your phone on these new phones. I'm like, what the fuck would you want to do that?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't deserve to watch a movie if you enjoy that. And they'd look at me like I, you know, just killed their mom or something.
Yeah.
Because they were just going to run the Star Wars movies in an endless loop on their phone.
Yeah.
I tried watching a movie on my phone once and I gave up 5 minutes in because I was just like, not happening.
Why
even
would
like
you...
I don't even like my portable DVD player that I have. It's like, I don't know, 8 inches, 9 inches screen. It's just like, I can't watch anything on this.
I just get bored so easily. I'm just like,
Yeah, they're only good for nighttime stuff. Like if your iPod's flat, then I'll just throw on my portable DVD player. But then again, these days I'll just leave the TV on and put my Roku on and just watch friggin' a 2-hour documentary on YouTube and fall asleep to that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
it's easy with all the stuff on Roku. You could find something weird to watch. I remember on the last presidential election, during that, I was watching... They had this channel called the Anomalies Channel, and yeah. I was watching these Peter Grave-hosted monster documentaries about Bigfoot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's still on there, but it had all the rare Sun Classics Bigfoot and UFO documentaries from the 70s.
Oh, yeah, like the old...
Yeah.
In Search Of, that TV series sort of stuff, was it?
Right, right. I think it had In Search Of episodes, but the prints were all, like, old bootleg. Like, it was clearly a gray market channel.
Dude, everything on Roku is freaking public domain crap. That's all it is.
Well, there's all the free stuff. There's some free channels actually have really good stuff that's licensed.
Yeah, yeah. They do have, what's that one channel? Oh, Drive-In Classics. That's right, yeah. All these subgenres that you see Alice, Sweet Alice, in about 4 different subgenres. And
yeah, and a lot of times you see the same movie under like 3 titles.
Although there is a Wang Wang film in there I never knew existed, so I've got to watch
really?
That one. Yeah, the Wang Wang West. The Wild Wild Wang, it's called. That's it.
Okay, well, there's one called the Grindhouse Channel that was just loading up stuff like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I've got that on my... Yeah, I've got that one saved. That's one.
Like, I was waiting for them to get a cease and desist because I think some of the stuff had a license on it, so I was okay.
Don't say that. Oh, and also I installed the Clutch Cargo Channel. That's a trip, that show.
I put the Star Lost Channel on because I'm not bored enough.
You got to put the Clutch Cargo on. It's so crazy, that show.
I've never seen it actually.
Oh man, it's
a clip in Pulp Fiction.
Exactly. That's the whole reason why I got to watch it. It's so dumb.
All right, you Roku motherfuckers, let's move on.
All right. Okay. So anyway, we'll push on now. So none of you saw apparently Stamp Day for Superman was a sequel to Superman the Mole Man, but I don't know how. It was nothing to do with it. It was just
a propaganda movie.
Yeah, right? But it was classed as a second Superman film, but it's only 18 minutes long, so I don't know how the hell it's a film. It's a short film.
It's not really a film.
That was actually kind of boring. Oh, I bought this typewriter with my stamps, Miss Lane. It's just like, who cares? We know, Jimmy. So there was that. I watched a couple of black and white episodes. I watched a couple of color ones called the second last one they ever made, one called The Perils of Superman, which was just so dumb, about these guys walking around in lead helmets, 10 people walking around in lead helmets trying to take over the city, and Superman can't see who they are because he can't see through lead, and it was just stupid. It was just ridiculous show it was. Well, I'm sure Rob Zombie will take a leaf out of that episode and take the lead helmets and stick it in one of his stupid movies in the future.
Yeah!
It's a good idea, that's for sure. Some clown.
Lead helmet, motherfucker.
Some be yeah. Some clown in a lead helmet, I'm sure, like Sid Haig.
Yeah, my new movie, 31.
That's it.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's and what else did I watch? There was those that Stamp Day. I think that was it. That was all I watched. Oh, and I watched all the special features on the Adventures of Superman series. Who has the entire series of that here out of you guys?
I only have the later seasons.
Oh, really?
You don't I found them on sale for like $9 each and just bought them on a lock. And this was last fall. So right. When I mentioned on Twitter how much I like George Reeves, it's because I was watching that box set.
Yeah. Okay. And, honey, you got any of them?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Fair enough. No, I've got them all. I had to buy them all. Oh, good one again, Warner Brothers Australia. Yeah, bring them all out except the last one. Season 5 and 6 together. You idiot. That's why they import it from the US. And you say, oh, don't import. Well, release them here, you idiots. For heaven's sake. So, let's move over to 2006's Hollywoodland.
They killed Superman!
Yep. Who had seen this before?
Me. I'd seen it.
Okay.
I saw it back when it came out. Like, rented it.
Right, right. Okay, then. How did you feel about when you first heard about Ben Affleck playing George Reeves? Because he seemed to be a bit contention. The guy can't seem to do anything without... copping some flack for it. And,
he can't play Superman without people giving him shit. He can't play Batman without people giving him shit.
Yep.
The fuck?
That's right.
He also played Daredevil, although he deserved shit for that.
He can't work, man. He just can't work.
Yeah.
I didn't care. It's like I didn't have any bias against him.
I didn't either. I thought you know, watching him play Reeves after watching Superman and the Mole Men, I was thinking, man, he's pretty good George Reeves.
He really was. Yeah, that's like, what struck me. He was really good.
I was sitting there thinking, man, Ben Affleck did a good job playing him. Like, he did a good job mimicking his speech and, you know, just sort of his facial expressions and stuff. I thought he did a good job with it.
Well, what I was watching the special features, what he did was he was wearing a false nose throughout the whole film. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
he looked different.
yeah. He was wearing a nose modeled on George Reeves's one. And he also, they said that he watched every episode of the entire Adventures of Superman series and kept interviews and stuff of George Reeves on his iPod and just listened to it just to get his way of speaking down right to sound
like
George Reeves. When he did
the audition for Superman, I just thought, I was like, man, his manner of speaking and his physicality was just dead on, I thought.
And they were saying as well in Hollywoodland that every scene involving George Reeves was true, but the Adrian Brody character was fictitious.
Yeah, he was based on a detective.
Yeah.
I have the name here somewhere.
Well, I'm getting at the name Louis Simo that he played was a fictitious name, is what I'm getting
at.
He was
based on a dude who investigated, but it was he's a cipher for that character.
Yeah, pretty much. But what'd you guys think of Hollywoodland anyway, Hannah?
I really like it. I liked it when I watched it back then, and I liked it when I watched it now. It's a good sort of old L.A. noir, like, throwback, kind of like Chinatown, although it's not as dark as Chinatown.
No.
It sort of feels like that, where it's this old-school L.A. culture, but you also have the Hollywood, the old Hollywood stuff mixed in, like you have the murder, and you have, you know, Adrian Brody's sort of scumbag detective character investigating stuff. I mean, like, he's a real shithead. Adrian Brody's character is. I mean, he's a piece of shit. And you have this stuff with him, and it cuts between that and George Reeves, you know, getting entangled with Toni Mannix, the wife of Eddie Mannix of MGM, and their affair and his career playing Superman and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and so it kind of cuts back and forth between that. But I love all the the sort of old Hollywood stuff where he's sitting at dinner tables and he sees, like, oh, there's Fred Zinnemann. Hire me, please. You know?
Well, what's interesting is some of the stuff in there is they basically filmed Urban Legends.
Absolutely. The kid who was going to shoot him, that's never been proven.
Never been proven. And from Here to Eternity screening, that just didn't happen.
No?
Yeah, no, that never happened, yeah.
Never been an alternate cut of that film. I looked it up. They said that's an urban legend. It never happened. It was just...
That people were going like, hey, where's Lois? Hey!
Yeah, it didn't happen. It's just like, you know.
See, that I've never seen From Here to Eternity, so I wouldn't know. And I don't know anything about the supposed myth around it.
But there is some stuff in it that's fiction, that's, you know, sort of Hollywood legend that they included just because of that fact.
People expect it, and it's kind of like, okay, the strongest scene is towards the end where I think it's his agent is sitting him down and saying, you know, your style of acting is not in vogue anymore. You know, you're a leading man, and they want, like, a Brando.
You guys who mumble and squint their eyes.
That was true. That actually did it. You know, he had conversations like that with his agent. That's why his career was faltering, because he was older. And it wasn't necessarily the Superman show that destroyed him. It was like just the fact that that type of acting training he had, that wasn't what got you roles in the studio pictures at the time.
Right. Okay, then. But I mean, that's that scene with the kid with the gun, that was pretty good, though.
It's a strong scene.
It really is. Yeah.
It's very effective.
Yeah. Oh, and Brody's character, Louis Simo, is based on Milo Spiriglio. That's the
okay.
The name of the detective.
Oh, okay, good stuff.
And I was seeing that in the promotional materials, they couldn't use the Superman S in the they would show Ben Affleck in the suit, but it would have the S gone from it, even though in the movie.
Yeah, I remember the trailers at the time. It was. Like, such an obvious legal dodge, it was ridiculous. It really makes you wonder about the thought process at corporations like Warner Brothers. It's like, you know, why just let them use the S? What the hell?
I almost wanted to, like, post pictures of it just to say, Ben Affleck's playing Superman. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to get fanboys to go, what the fuck?
Only actor ever to play Superman and Batman, though.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And Daredevil.
Oh, yes. Cannot forget about Daredevil now, can we?
I think we should forget about Daredevil.
Oh, be quiet now. No, it's the director's cut's excellent, so you just be quiet.
The director's cut is better, but it still sucks.
I think Rex Smith was better in the Trial of the Incredible Hulk.
Stewart just likes the director's cut of Daredevil because it has Coolio in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
sing Fantastic Voyage, otherwise doesn't save the movie.
Yeah, okay. What I liked about this film was the authenticity of it all, of the feel of it. Just everything was like, oh, okay. It really seems like it was something out of the 50s. It's, you know what it is, one thing, though? It's a very quiet movie.
Yeah.
I found myself really cranking that sound system up just to hear Brody talk, and it's like, oh boy, this is really, really low, you know.
And I liked all the stuff with Adrian Brody's kid, you know, not dealing with the death of George Reeves. You know, the Superman shot himself with a Nazi pistol, shot himself with a Luger.
Yeah,
you know, all that stuff. Like Adrian Brody just trying to connect with his kid, even though Brody's like an alcoholic, you know, scumbag detective.
Yeah,
you know? and it just exacerbates things. But I liked all that stuff where, you know, his kid is so affected by it, and you have the little tropes that repeat themselves. His kid tries to burn his Superman costume on the couch.
Yeah.
later you get Reeves burning his costume on the grill.
You know, yeah, that was funny. That, yeah.
You know, there's like this this theme of setting fire to the Superman suit. You know?
They said a lot of that was embellished for the fact that Jack Larson was saying he never ever heard George Reeves complain about being Superman. Only once did he complain was when the flying technique in the first season went wrong. He ended up, as you see in the film, the wires broke and ended up hurting his back. And that's why they had to change the flying technique to him just jumping off a springboard in and out of windows for the later seasons. But they reckon that he never complained about being Superman that much. So that part was fabricated. a bit, I dare say, just for, you know, dramatic sake.
Yeah, just to have him kind of being depressed about his career.
Otherwise, I'll say, well, if they try and get the conclusion that he killed himself and he's not complaining about being Superman, well, what are you really complaining about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the movie's pretty ambiguous about the conclusion.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't really give a clear conclusion. It gives you the option of saying, right, this is one of them. What do you think? That's okay. Then, which leads me to what I was thinking. What I was saying before. What do you guys think, John?
What of this? What exactly? Which I think is the most plausible? Or I think just shot, I think he shot himself. And
really?
I read Judo Jean LaBelle. Like I read his autobiography, and he was playing Mr. Kryptonite on the Superman appearance tours, and was training George in judo. But he felt like George was murdered and. I don't know. I just think a lot of people give in to conspiratorial thinking because they don't want to think somebody just killed themselves. It's too depressing to write somebody off like that. No, he was murdered, you know, or, you know, it's just... It sounds to me like he was drinking with a lot of shady characters and stuff, and you could certainly make that leap of logic, but I honestly think if he was murdered, the cops would have said, all right, we're investigating this as a murder. And I think people are too much in this myth of the over-corrupt cops who overlook everything, and I just don't think that's true.
I agree with John. And, you know, there were all those stories about Toni Mannix and how she built a shrine to George Reeves and all that stuff. I don't think she would have done that if she had him killed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's insane.
And another thing is, like, it makes you question kind of the... Sounds like he was a nice guy, but he was an alcoholic. And
yeah,
the guy struggled with addiction. You know,
right,
that's common for. I mean, people who are suicidal often struggle with that. You know,
right. And also, it's like he wasn't dating. I mean, he's in this relationship with a married woman, and then the next girlfriend. It's just like they weren't like women of great character that he was dating. You know what I mean? It's just like he's getting into these relationships that are going to be mentally. Stressful anyway, like especially in the 50s with his career, and if you're a drunk, he's just kind of asking for trouble, you know?
Yeah.
I always say the problem with a lot of these actors is they don't date the cashier down at the grocery store, they're dating another actor, you know, they're dating this actress or whatever.
They date a competitor basically.
Right, right.
Like you always hear about these relationships between actors and they always end up getting jealous of each other because actors are ultimately into themselves. You know, like, and I'm not saying that to be a dick. I mean, a lot of, I know actors, and they will admit that they, you know, are pretty narcissistic. And so when you have two narcissistic people in a relationship, it's a recipe for a toxic relationship. You want some, if you have an actor who's into themselves, you're going to want someone who's into them, you know?
Yeah, they're more into their careers than they are each other, and that's why. Yeah.
Right, like, you know, one of them's not doing as well as the other. I mean, look at fucking Phil Hartman, you know?
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Like, his wife murdered him out of jealousy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, well, then, is the other possibility as well, that the gun did accidentally go off by that, you know, Leonor Lemon during a struggle, and he may have been shot that way.
It's possible.
I mean, who was the dude who said... He claimed that she came down the stairs and said, you know, I was down here, I was down here, tell them I was down here, but I don't know.
But, you know, if that's happening at a party and everybody's drunk, he goes up and shoots himself, everybody's going to want their story to be different so they don't get pinned for it.
Exactly.
You know, like, no, I didn't do anything to him. And, like, everybody gets in a panic and cover your ass mode, you know? And so it's like,
yeah, like, I mean, they say, like, well, why'd you, like, Adrian Brody's character's like, why'd you wait 45 minutes? And it's like, motherfucker, all of them were drunk. They were probably freaked out, you know? Like, yeah. And it's obvious he was dead. If he was still alive, they may have.
Because what happens when you find him dead and you're drunk? Oh, shit! I better sober up!
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit!
Time to skull down the Tabasco sauce.
Cops are going to think I was drunk and killed him.
It sounds like a Cheech and Chong movie.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was about to say, it sounds like one of those dumb teen slob comedies from the 80s. It's like, oh, shit!
Yeah.
I drove my dad's car into the swimming pool! Oh, shit! Oh shit, the jock just screwed a donkey. Oh shit.
Oh shit, he just put his dick through the women's bathroom.
Oh shit. He actually went upstairs with a dude. Oh shit.
God, I hate those movies.
All right, okay. But yeah, getting back to the supporting cast now in this film, I like just about everybody in this film.
Oh, that's great.
Diane Lane was excellent. Yeah, even the insufferable Bob Hoskins was good.
Bob Hoskins was great, and Diane Lane was super hot. You know.
She was always attached to that script. Apparently, it went through several studios, and she was always attached to it. She said she's going to play.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that one.
She just, like, she's so stinking hot in that movie. She is, like, her walking in, like, when he figures out she's Eddie Mannix's wife, and she's, like, in that towel, good morning. I was like, oh, God.
Right.
Especially when he went, oh, shit!
Oh, shit! You're the head of Paramount's wife! I mean, I'm head of MGM's wife! Oh, shit!
See, they missed out on a lot of sitcom potential there.
Exactly, yeah.
It could have been a horny slop comedy.
And there was that LAPD cop who was in Punisher Warzone. He's the guy who always plays cops who are, like, kind of meek and shy. It's like,
yeah. Another one. Yeah. Who else do we have in this film? We had, Bob Hoskins, Diane Lane.
Diane Lane, you know, you got...
Oh, Robin Tunney from The Craft. I remember her from that more than...
Yeah.
She was good
as that Leonor Lemon, yeah.
I kind of wonder what happened to her. It's like, oh, there she is. She's in this movie.
I couldn't pick her for ages until, like, oh, shit, she looked familiar. When I looked at the end credits, like, oh, Robin Tunney, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, the girl from The Craft. All right.
Yeah, and Empire of, Records.
What do you guys think? Oh, yeah, she's in that. What do you guys think of Adrian Brody in the movie?
I liked him. I hear he's an insufferable human being in real life, but I mean, push that
he's
aside.
He's working with Dario Argento these days, and he just did a Jackie Chan movie with John Cusack, who's another insufferable person.
Oh, so. God, yeah.
Oh, and he worked with your favorite there, Roman Polanski as well. Won an Oscar with him.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, shit! Just raped a 13-year-old in the tub! Oh, shit!
And, you know, he's really good in The Pianist. It's absolutely the best Holocaust movie, period. It's better than Schindler's List. It's absolutely
better than Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Don't push the envelope too much, you know. But,
nothing tops the requested golden shower scene in Ilsa She-Wolf.
But I don't know. I like Adrian Brody quite a bit in this movie. I mean, you know, because he plays the... What was it? They make, like, Ralph Meeker references, but he doesn't he's not a tough guy detective. He's kind of a piece of shit.
The tough private detective is a myth. The whole tough private detective thing is a myth.
He's very much like the scumbag private detective.
Yeah,
and there's the whole subplot with the insane dude who believes his wife is cheating on him, mm-hmm. and he keeps taking the money even though he knows the guy's nuts, and then the guy later like shoots his wife in the vag.
I don't even know if that's a real story or not. I mean,
doubt it. It's just made up for the movie.
That was fictional. It was too much like Boogie Nights with what's the character, Little Bill or whatever, killed his wife. fucking guys in the driveway and everything.
Yeah.
It seemed swiped from that.
Although his wife wasn't cheating on him, Bill's wife was.
Yeah, in the open.
I was actually
rooting for his character when I saw Boogie Nights. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was thrilled he shot his wife. I was like, good
She's
for
a horrible
you,
human
man.
Being.
She sucks.
It's the 70s. You get away with murder. <It's> like...
Why'd you kill yourself? Everybody would have understood.
Exactly.
Disposable woman anyway, really. In that industry.
I don't know. I really like Adrian Brody's, like, you know, and it has the private detective trope of, like, he has to get his ass kicked at some point. You know?
Yeah.
He has to He has to have his face pounded to hamburger.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I wonder how many private eyes have actually been beaten up like that.
Probably.
Like two big guys belly club him over the head, and one holds him, and the other one like looks like Oliver Reed and punches him in the stomach, and don't come around anymore, and spits on him. You know,
I mean, he copped a chain right across the face. I mean, that could pretty much kill somebody.
He got a chain in the face.
Yeah.
Well, it's like it was said in an old 87th Precinct novel. How many times a private detective has ever solved the murder in real life? The answer is never. Still zero. It's on the level with psychics. Zero.
Really?
Psychic.
Yep. Psychics have never solved anything. Zero.
Even, oh, no, he's not. He's a... James Randi. He's not a psychic. He's a, what's he called?
He's a debunker. He says don't listen. Yeah, he says don't listen to him. He says I'll tell you all the cheap tricks they're doing to find out about you.
I fucking love James Randi. He's awesome, mate. That guy's so awesome. Damn anybody who doesn't like him.
Exactly. Anybody who doesn't like James Randi can go to hell.
Okay. I also like Criswell.
Yeah, okay.
I predict that by 1970, people will be living on Mars.
Hey, Criswell was an alcoholic as well, mind you.
Wasn't everybody hung around Ed Wood?
Yeah, I mean, Ed Wood, if you were not an addict, Ed Wood would tell you to get the fuck out of his house. You know?
Exactly. His movies were a social scene for drunks and oddballs, you know?
Mm-hmm. But we did get Tor Johnson, so that was one thing he gave us.
That is true. Tor Johnson's the best thing about all of it. Tor Johnson comes crashing through the set. You just want him to wipe everybody out because you're just rooting for Tor Johnson.
Bella Lugosi.
Yeah.
When he's delivering his lines as the cop in Plan 9 before he's a zombie, and you can't understand a damn thing he says.
Yeah.
Exactly,
he's like,
yeah.
Okay, you're going to be a car.
I'm a big boy, Johnny.
Yeah. But he looks so awesome when he rises out of the grave. He's like the best zombie ever.
Yeah, I know, and he slips when he's trying to get out, and he brings himself back up.
Well, nobody will ever notice that.
No, of course not. No one noticed the cardboard gravestone as well getting knocked over.
That's what I love about the Ed Wood movie. Nobody notices things like that. Come on.
Yeah.
It's all about
see that
big
kid
thing.
Grab Vampire's titties?
Yes,
yeah. I was jealous.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Hollywood Land, let's bring it around to a rating. What do you guys, John, what are you going to give it?
I give it a 6.5. Which is a good rating for me.
For you, that's very, very good, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Hannah?
I give it a 7.
Yes, I only give it like an 8.5. I really enjoyed this quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a good movie. If you want a good, like, true crime, quote-unquote true crime, neo-noir...
Yep.
It's a really solid choice. You could do a lot worse.
I love the cinematography on it as well. It's shot beautifully.
Yeah, it's really good. The director, Alan Coulter, mostly does TV stuff. Like, he's only directed one other movie, Remember Me, which looks awful. But he's mostly a TV guy.
Okay. All right. Well, our final thoughts are, you two believe that he killed himself. I believe he didn't. I'm not trying to ascribe to that conspiratorious theory. I honestly don't think he did. I think he was either A, killed by Eddie Mannix, not Tony. I think Eddie Mannix had him killed because he broke her heart, which is something he said that, you know, you can be with her, I don't care, but if you break her heart, I'll kill you. And the other possible theory that the gun accidentally went off. There is a few books out there where one of the books interviews Leonore Lemon just before her death in 1990, I believe it was, which kind of exonerates her from the whole thing. This guy claims to have the ultimate book written on it. That one is called Hollywood Murder Mystery by Lee Saylor. You can get that on Amazon. The Kindle edition will set you back about $3. If there's a hard copy version, there is a paperback version going for about $5. So there's that, if you want to look at that possibility. There's the other one I was talking about, which is called Hollywood Superman by author James Sullivan. The Mystery of the Murder of Movie Television Actor George Reeves. Again, you can get it on Kindle for about $3. Or the paperback will set you back about $5 as well. So these are not very expensive things. They're only short. They're like about 100, 150 pages. Any George Reeves book you get in about his murder will not be expensive into 500, 600 page territory. It'll be just around about 150, I think 200 pages are the most you'll get of one, which is about all you need. I mean, you don't really need, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages of backstory. There are a few more. There was that one, John, you were saying. What was it called again, please?
Hollywood Kryptonite, which I found at a library sale. And that was like, 280 pages or so. But it was also served as a pretty good George Reeves biography.
Okay, then.
He talked about his relationship with his mother and everything, and how he thought the appearance in Gone with the Wind was going to be a big bridge to bigger things. And just didn't quite happen.
Right. Now, what was that part we had been... just backtracking with Hollywoodland. What was that part where the mother seemed very, very close to George Reeves, yet Brody's character exposed her as someone who he didn't like at all, that George Reeves didn't like his own mother, and because she lied to him about his father killing himself when he never really did, and...
His mother did... she didn't believe that he killed himself and that she was going to get married to... Miss Lemon, because she did say like he never told me, blah blah blah, like, so elements to that were true. I don't know the whole thing, but I do know that there was some truth to the mother's reaction.
Right. Okay, then. So the book John was talking about, Hollywood Kryptonite, The Bulldog, The Lady and the Death of Superman.
You know what the Hollywood Kryptonite is? Lead. Hot lead.
Yeah, that's not a very good joke.
Oh, shit.
Okay, that's by author Sam Kashner and Nancy Schoenberger. That you can get on Amazon, hardcover, from 79 cents.
Yeah, it's worth that, I think, if you want to read about the case.
Yeah, or paperback starting around about the $4 mark. And the last book that I know of, anyway, by Jan Allen Henderson, was Speeding Bullet, The Life and Bizarre Death of George Reeves. And that's going to set you back a bit more if you're going to try and buy that. No Kindle version of that one. And that starts at around about the $30-odd mark.
Jeez.
But there is one book out there that I must absolutely have. And it is called Superman Serial to Serial. You guys have heard of this one at all?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a book by the author Gary H. Grossman, I should say. First published in 1977, but had numerous reprints afterwards. It talks about the entire Superman serial from 1948 and 1950 with Kirk Allen and Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, and chronicles every episode and much, much more of the adventures of Superman. That's all it talks about. And that you can get, that's 320 pages, that one. And that one you can buy from Amazon. It's about $35, or you can buy directly.
Damn.
Or you can buy directly from the author, I believe, for about $30.
Self-published.
Yeah, but it's actually a big table book or something like that, from what I can see. So there's those if you want to delve further into the death of George Reeves. I myself, personally, and I can't speak for the other fellas, George Reeves is my favourite. Clark Kent is my favourite Superman as well. He was the one who was obviously in the cheapest production of Superman, save next to the serials that came out in the late 40s and 1950. But I prefer him the most, and I feel he doesn't get enough credit as Superman. I think the Warner Brothers are partially to blame for that. Yes, they released the whole series on DVD, but that was a given. That was a given for the fact that they were doing that whole 2006 thing with Superman Returns. They were releasing basically anything of Superman at the time, hence that big box set that came out where you got all the Superman animated series in there, along with all the movies and the Adventures of Superman as well, which was released in their own sets on DVD. So I don't know about you guys. What do you think? How does George Reeves fit into this whole Superman thing for you? Where does he sit? Hana?
I think he sucks. No, I'm kidding. You know, he's the one I grew up with when I was a kid. I didn't grow up with Christopher Reeves. I grew up with George Reeves. And I really like his performance. Like you said, he's a really good Clark Kent. But yeah, I mean, I don't have particularly strong thoughts about it. I mean, I think he was the Superman that was good for the time.
Okay, so if someone says to you Superman, who do you think of immediately?
When I think of Superman, I think of the S. I don't know. I mean,
I'm talking about actor-wise. Actor-wise.
I hate to say it. Probably Christopher Reeves. I don't know.
You don't have to hate to say it. I mean, obviously, it's 99% of the bloody population out there who do know Superman would be saying Christopher Reeve, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, John?
90% of our listeners would probably say that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously. Well,
Christopher Reeves is just better. He's the best known. My favorite representation of Superman in movies is those Fleischer Brothers cartoons, which I think are excellent. I think they're just perfect. When I think actors or live action, it's George Reeves.
Yeah, nice.
Because he's the first I saw, and I like that version. I kind of like the Superman that isn't able to make time go backwards.
Oh, yeah.
It's a story and fights different types of villains every week and not the same villain in every movie. And, you know, when he fights a strong man at a circus, they basically get into a strength contest. You know, I kind of like that Superman. I don't care about ticking time bombs on nuclear weapons and stuff. It's just all that stuff's dull to me. So that's my idea of Superman. I think a lot of these heroes, I think, were better when they kept them low scale, even in the comic books.
Yes, and I do have to say that George Reeves' Superman is the only one who had somebody killed in an episode. Well, not directly, but what it was, he captured this this crime couple and didn't know what to do with them, so he stuck them on top of a mountain. He flew off, and they slipped to their death.
Yeah, that baffled me when I was a kid. I did not understand the morality of that episode.
I know, right?
It really confused me. It was strange, but I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah. Let me ask you quickly then, black and white episodes or color ones?
The black and whites are better in terms
me
of storytelling.
Too.
The color ones are kind of goofy, and although they did slip in a lot of shots of the actress playing Lois in like cheesecake camera angles.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Because I saw one where they went back in time to the time of cavemen, and they got her in a cave girl outfit, and there's some pretty hot shots of her, like, just kind of hidden in the episode for the dads, you know, having to watch it with their kids.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mind Noel Neal as Lois Lane. She was good, but I preferred Phyllis Coates from the first season.
Yeah.
I mean, she was great.
I think they were both good.
They were both very, very good, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's still alive as well. She's still alive. Phyllis Coates is still alive. Jack Larson's still alive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all pushing towards 90, but holy crap.
Imagine if George Reeves was alive today.
Oh, God, how good would that be?
Yeah.
Sadly, no longer with us. And I can tell you one thing. It was a VHS tape I rented out, I don't even know how many years back, many, many years back, called Hollywood Ghost Stories. And I think it is on YouTube if you want to check it out there. And it talks about, you know, obviously ghosts of Hollywood actors who are gone. And they were saying that there was one time where there was a party being held in George Reeves' old house after his death. And somebody came along. Someone was in the house and they saw the ghost of George Reeves in his Superman costume pointing at them to get out of the house. How fucked up's that? You can laugh. You can laugh till you actually see it, then you shit your pants.
Then they go, oh shit!
they probably
did. Oh shit, George Reeves is there in his costume! Oh shit!
You know what, you can laugh, but when I saw that, I shit my pants like, holy crap.
Did he come out of the bathtub?
I don't know. But Hollywood Ghost Stories, I'm dead sure that was the one. Who narrated it? I don't remember. I really don't.
I hope it's Rod Serling.
I don't know who did it.
If you will, a dead actor.
Yeah, I think it was
Paul. It was Paul Winfield. George Reeves' house. It's a nice, splendid place.
Yeah. Now, where's that Jack Larson at? Right, right. But yeah, so there's that Hollywood Ghost Stories, and there are a few documentaries on the death of George Reeves on YouTube, which I would suggest checking out after you listen to this show, because I, like I said, I feel George Reeves gets shunted to the side as a Superman actor, and I think that's wrong. He's the first, well, the first to come into the public consciousness anyway, really, like really into the public consciousness after Kirk Allen. And like I said, to me, the best. Still, I still watch his shows. I watch them more than I watch the Christopher Reeve Superman films. Sorry, not saying I did. Like I said, not saying I dislike Christopher Reeve. I don't. But boy, that part 3 and 4 are a tough pill to swallow, I tell you.
But not as much as you watch Man of Steel, right?
Yeah, I've seen it once. That's enough.
I've seen it quite a few times.
Nah, it's got my local JB dude for $8. I'm not going to be picking up, let's say that. Nah.
It's because Stuart hates quality, you know?
Yeah, I hate watching a film where it looks like someone's picked my TV up and shaking the crap out of it. Yes.
I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater and then talked about it on the show.
Yeah, save your time, John. No big loss.
Well, the truth is I don't watch movies more than once in a decade, so... Rare,
oh, unless they got a guy named Ping Wong Dong in it, right? Then you're watching.
I think you're making that name up.
Yeah, I think I am, right?
I've actually got so many Chinese films, I can watch them once every 10 years. You know, each of the favorite titles. I've got so many of them.
I know, John put up this guy's name and I just commented saying, I'm sure you're making these names up.
What's frightening is I'm not.
Yeah, I totally believe you're not, but I would not be surprised if you were. I don't think no one would be really... The only ones that would be none the wiser would be, like, Garrow, Jesse, and Scheme would be the only ones that pick up on it. Like, dude, that guy doesn't exist. Oh, man. All right, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you for not complaining to iTunes about last week's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We tried to be a bit more serious this one around.
I was upset that I would never get another job in my life, but I enjoyed it.
See, and you did, didn't you? You ended up working at where your new employee is, right?
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
My school didn't kick me out either, so.
And you get to start your new podcast when we're gone.
Yeah, Hunter looks at the movies.
Hunter looks at the movies. Recording from Hunter's living room.
I was dying. I was fucking dying.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Criterion this week.
John and Stuart are not here. We're going to look at Criterion movies this week and talk about metal.
So this week I picked up the Criterion of Tulane Blacktop and I got the new Devin Townsend album. By the way, John is not here, and neither is that dumbass Stuart.
I did buy the new Monty Hellman Western 2-pack from Criterion yesterday.
Of course you did.
Oh yeah, Let's Remaster films have been bootlegged like crazy on the public domain since videotapes have been available.
No, it has some good special features on there, but fucking. a podcast is overdue on the new Devin Townsend album. It's been out 2 weeks or something. I don't know.
This week I just picked up on Criterion.
Why do you make me sound like...
On
like,
Hunter's yeah, movie well, show. I just got
I'm not
the...
Gonna, I'm not going to say his name, but why do you make me sound like him?
The Bicycle Thief and the 400 Blows, and let's talk about them, huh?
I would never do a podcast on Bicycle Thief and the 400 Blows.
Hey, did you guys see Interstellar? The new Christopher.
Oh, I haven't
talk about
seen
that.
It.
We're going to talk about that this week. On Hunter Goes to the Movies.
This week we're going to talk about that 1955 masterpiece, Mononcle.
I think it's crazy. I haven't seen Interstellar yet, but people are pretty divided on it.
Yeah, it's getting really split reactions.
It's not getting the universal dick sucking that.
No, it's a real divider.
So this week on Hunter's movie show, we're going to leave the U.S. and we're going to talk about I Am Cuba from 1961.
That's something I would never do.
Yeah.
fuck Cuba. Fuck that commie shithole.
Yeah, all right. And this week on Hunter's Movie Show, we're going to talk about... what was it? The Robert Downey film. God, I've forgotten the name of it.
Oh, fucking... Putney Swope?
Putney Swope, that's it. Yeah.
Putney Swope's the shit. That is... You know, that is an MMC movie because it's so fucking insanely politically incorrect.
I would have watched it, but Netflix took it off. Hold on, Netflix.
Oh, no, Netflix, you suck.
Hold on. Only someone else can get me a copy somewhere because I ain't paying for it. But I would certainly watch it.
That movie's fucked up. You would love it, Stu. I'm serious.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you would. It's so fucked up.
You know, I was a big fan of that movie, and the first person to tell me about it was Garrow.
Oh, like boy,
he saw it at like a film festival or film screening. He said it was a riot, and I rented the video and was cracking up at it.
Oh, it's hilarious, but Stuart, you would love it. I mean, it's all like insane racial humor.
Yeah. Oh, well. Sounds right my alley, right? I'm just not saying nothing.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. It's good to have you back, Hunter.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
When did your movie show come out?
Oh, yeah, Hunter's Movie Living Room or whatever.
Hunter looks at the movies.
Hunter looks at the movies.
This is so Hunter good. Looks at the movies from his couch. First episode, 80s horny teen movies retrospective. Yeah.
We're going to do The Last American Virgin.
And Bachelor Party.
Bachelor Party.
Let's talk about the scene where Monique Gabrielle's head changes to four different characters.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to call Hunter Looks at the Movies. Just to like...
You should do
just
it. To go. It's like this week at Hunter Looks at the Movies, we're going to talk about 70s titty movies. First up, Gas Pump Girls from 1979.
This week at Hunter Looks at the Movies, we're going to do Andy Sedaris films.
No, Sherry don't get Capro. Me. I have every one of those. Don't get me started there.
I bet you
sensational,
do.
Yeah. Actually, as a gift, I got that for Farmer. I got it sent to his house. I knew damn well he'd like it. 12 movies for $5. Are you serious? I had to.
Yeah, I've never opened it, but I bought it.
You need to open that shit up, man. See, like,
I haven't
get fucking
seen those since they were on cable.
Oh my god, yeah. And Sedaris, he's unreal, that guy.
I remember Hard Ticket to Hawaii being pretty funny.
Oh god, that's got like, I think that's got Danny Trejo in it. Yeah. Young Danny Trejo on the dance floor, like smiling and doing some disco dancing, man. And that is worth the $5 alone. It's got other people like Pat Morita in there.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii? I thought he was in Hard Hunted.
No, he's in, like, I'm talking about the box set, not in that film.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah. Oh, yeah, the movies are loaded with a lot of actors who became bigger cult icons later on.
Yeah, totally. That's right. And I think even Robert Darby made one of those films. I'm not too sure. I don't know.
And, Eric Estrada's in one.
Oh, Eric Estrada, that's something off. Yeah, yeah. He's in, what was that one, Miami? Was it Bullets, something like that? No, Guns. He's in a film called Guns.
Yes.
Yeah. It's Eric Estrada in Guns. Oh, my God. You got to get that set, Hunter. Like, lay down the $5, man. It's fantastic. Hunter's just died. Hunter started his Hunter Goes to the Movies already.
Hunter Goes to the Movies.
He's like, oh, all this Andy Sedaris titty talk.
Malibu Express,
that's the one.
I smell an episode coming up.
Darby Hinton.
Oh, if we do that episode of Sedaris, if we pick, say, three of his flicks, I want Andrew Farmer on, please.
Yeah, he's got to come on. And that motherfucker, I still haven't met with him yet. He lives in my area.
See, listeners, this is how bad Hunter is. He's just lazy as shit.
What do you mean I'm lazy as shit?
Dude, he's the guy who moved to Dallas. You could make an effort to get up and go and see him, you know?
God damn it! When I make an effort, he's like, I'm busy.
Oh, really? Oh, well then.
Yeah.
He's probably like batting off somewhere in a toilet or something like that.
I don't know. I'm gonna get more aggressive with him. You know what? I'll tell him I have,
syphilis?
Let's see. No. I'll tell him I have some Green Lantern shit at my house, like, exclusive.
Yeah.
Like, I got a producer's cut of Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds. It's never been seen.
That won't get him there. It won't do it.
Okay, I've got a whole season of Green Lantern, the TV show. Never been seen. It was canceled, and they didn't want to make money off of it.
You want to get Andy to your place? Just tell him you got like an unreleased Uwe Boll film on tape that would keep me in the car quick.
I'll say I've got Attack on Wall Street 2. How's that?
Postal 5.
Yeah.
House of the Dead 3.
The only ones I've seen of his is House of the Dead and Blubberella. That was it.
I've only seen the one with In the Name of the King, like Burt Reynolds. Is
oh, Jesus Christ!
That's all I've seen.
Jason
Statham is like flying around, like because
he's being choreographed by Ching Su Tung.
Yeah, he's got the Ching Su Tung fight, so they're doing all the Chinese ghost story and Swordsman 2 type.
Yeah, all right, enough. Yeah. Stuck in. One B, your name's rolled off. It sounded like the bloody menu restaurant I'll be looking at in a few days.
Wasn't Matt Lillard like the Deceptive Prince? So like,
yes, he was. It was great.
Jesus Christ. And Bert never went, baha! While he was dying.
He was like, you know why I know this about crops? Why? Because I am king.
Yeah, all right, enough. All right, until next week, folks. Sign off, Tana.
Adios!
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.
You know, I'm guessing the Public Enemy fan would have been Garrow.
He's a huge fan. Huge fan of Public Enemy.
No, God, why does that surprise me?
Back when I was, I knew Garrow from tape trading. He was like the only other tape trader who listened to Public Enemy.
Hey, John, have you heard Fear of a Black Planet? You wait till Obama comes in. There's the real Fear of a Black Planet we got.
Ugh.